And now, it's time for the show, This Old Dungeon.
Hello, Dungeoneers. This is your emergency March episode of This Old Dungeon. We had some scheduling conflicts, so the regular co-hosts, we're going to get to our episode in April, early April, give you a double dose in April. But I put the all call out, got on the bat phone or whatever, and tried to find any one of my gaming friends that would like to join me for an evening just to get something out in March here, and had a huge well of response, but leading the pack and someone that I'm super excited to talk to again, Dave Townsend of Games with Dave. Dave, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Lou. Thanks for having me on. I had I had so much fun the last time we talked that when I saw that call go out, it was like playing not whack-a-mole, but like a slap game to see who could get there first. And it was like, I was like, yes, when you emailed me and said that I was the first to respond. So
yeah, I was excited to get it, man. You know, obviously on your show, I think you've been able to talk about a little bit about how you got into gaming, but I'm hoping we get some crossover here from some of our listeners. Do you want to tell us a little bit about like your origin as a gamer, and then tell us, what is Games with Dave, and how can our listeners catch that?
I'm probably going to have you repeat the whole question again. But as far as me getting into gaming, my brother, when he was still around, had gotten into gaming. And I was a little punk 6-year-old kid. He was 11 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I was the baby that was unexpected. So, and I was 6, so he would have been 17, just about to go into the Marines. So he was able to escape my trickery. But my mom didn't really want us playing Dungeons and Dragons. She thought we were going to let the devil in the house. This was back in 1981.
It's a serious concern in the 80s.
It was, and as part of that, he would play after she was gone to bed because she slept like a ton of bricks. And we had those old grates. I can't think of what they're called in the house. It were literally holes in the floor that had a grate over them. And you could see down into the room below. So I could hear my brother and his friends talking, and I peered down and they're playing. So I marched on down the stairs and I'm like, what are you guys doing? And you saw everybody at the table just jump because they're like, oh shit, we're in trouble. And I'm like, what are you guys doing? And I looked, and they had this big piece of paper with, I think, dice or coins or something on it that they were using to represent their characters and monsters. And I'm kind of peering around and like, can I play? And they're all like, no, go back to bed. Get out of here. And I'm like, and then I saw the book, and it had the player's guide with the statue on the front with them climbing up to pry the jewels out of the eyes. And I'm like, I'm not supposed to have that. And at 6, I already knew because I had heard my mother giving my brother a ton of crap about playing it. And I'm like, well, I'm going to play. And they're like, what do you mean you're going to play? I'm like, I'll tell mom if you don't let me. So I was like, I was 6, maybe 7 at the time, and I was just a little shit. Am I allowed to use?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. I have a bad tendency of swearing when I talk. but I just threatened to tell my mom, and that's how I earned my spot at the table. I got to play in a few games. I played a rogue because I found that, or a thief back then, because I found it the easiest. And through the progression from thief to rogue, I've always played thieves and rogues, be it DCC, 5th edition, whatever I play, OSE, you name it, I'm playing thieves or rogues. So
I always found them to be like the pinch hitters. Like they can do a little bit of combat. They can do some kind of intellectual stuff.
Yeah. And I just liked, as a little kid, I liked being sneaky. Like, I like to hide on my brother. A funny story, if you don't mind me diverging. My brother had gone into the Marines, came home on leave, and my mom got sick and had to go into the hospital for a couple of days. So it was just me and my brother at the house. And he went out and he bought these two little plastic toy guns that looked like space guns, but they shot these plastic discs at a pretty high speed, and you could nail each other pretty good with them. And he called a couple of his buddies up. We turned out all the lights in the house, and we're chasing each other around with these guns. Well, I decided to get up on the top of the refrigerator and stake out up there and wait for everybody. And I got everybody but my brother. But they looked for me. He couldn't find me, but I couldn't get him because they were all sticking with him. And they didn't rat me out. I'll give them credit. And every time they would walk by, though, you could see his friend's eyes kind of shift up. And they're like, Bob, how do you not see him? And but I was just crouched down on the top of the fridge. But that is how I got into gaming, was by blackmailing my brother.
So did your mom ever let up, or did that remain a secret up until, you know, you moved out of the house? Or
You know, she knew. She said that she woke up and heard us playing and realized that it was a little more innocuous than she thought. Heard them playing with me and everybody laughing. So she just decided to leave it alone. The ban, however, didn't stick or stuck on music for years, which is a story for another day. But
yeah, it's that's at a time for those of you listening that might be younger. You know, music didn't always have the parental advisory warning on it and stuff. So there was a lot of stigma on different types of music, depending on what the album art was and stuff like that. I remember that being a thing in my house too. You know, if I wanted to buy something, if it had the least bit of impropriety in the album art, it was going to be a hard sell.
So. Yeah, I remember bringing home Twisted Sister's Stay Hungry. And I think I'd made it about two steps up to the second floor. And my mom's like, let me see what you got there. And she just took the tape. She's like, no way, Jose. And I'm like, ah. So we had been listening to it on headphones in the bus, on the bus, passing it around. Because way back then, kids, we didn't have Bluetooth technology. We had the Walkman and like, what, maybe 84, 85 when that came out?
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah. So it was a whole crazy and wild world back then of low tech. And
I remember we didn't even have like earbuds. I remember I had a pair of headphones that actually got snapped in half. And so those used to be the perfect ones to bring to school because you could have one half of them and your buddy in the same seat could have the other one.
Yeah, that was perfect. So.
Oh, man. So take us on the voyage here from playing back with your brother and his friends to I imagine this is a huge voyage to when you decide I'm going to do a show and go on YouTube and have gaming with
you. You want the whole voyage?
Or as much as you want to divulge, man.
Yeah, I'm good. So after my brother went in the Marines, I stopped playing until high school, at least D&D. I mean, I played board games like we talked about, Stop Thief being one of my favorite, Dark Tower, the original Dark Tower kids. Oh, boy, so many. Mousetrap, you know, Operation, tons of various card games from Uno to Gin Rummy and all that. But when I got into high school, I made a group of friends and they all played D&D, and it was second edition AD&D by then. And they're like, do you want to play? And I'm like, yeah, sure. I used to play with my brother and I thought I knew everything I was doing and had no clue what I was doing. But we started playing and they asked me to DM a game, and I pulled out the Monstrous Compendium. Got that out. I flipped around in it and I'm like, dang, the tree ant looks awfully fun. Maybe I should throw that at these guys to start them out. TPK, my very first session as a DM. I'm quite proud to say that. I don't think it would have mattered what they rolled, because the tree ants just turned them to pulp in a matter of maybe 4 or 5 rounds. And they're like,
yeah,
dude, you can't throw tree ants at us.
The second edition tree ant, if I remember right, I mean, that's like almost 100 hit point creature.
Yeah, I think it was 75, if I remember right. And then, yeah, magic resistance. And I threw it at like level one characters. Like, have at it, guys. And like, I remember my friend Dennis just looking at me across the table, like, what are you doing? And like I said, I had no clue what I was doing. I had only played a few times with my brother. And I took a little time off after that. They were like, yeah, you know, maybe you shouldn't DM. And when my brother came home, we got more into board games like Risk and stuff like that. He wasn't really into D&D, but he started getting back into art. He was an amazing artist.
Oh, really?
And I'll have to share some of his pictures with you at some point here. But getting into the art, one of the first pictures he drew, I have hanging up in my little closet studio here. It's four adventurers walking into a misty forest alongside a mountain. And I think when he drew that, it triggered something in him. And he started playing with his friends again. And at that point, let me see. When he got out of the Marines, when he started playing again, I should say, I was maybe 14, and I was an even bigger punk than I was when I was six. Like, I was just like, I was a turd, you know. And we didn't wind up talking for quite a few years, because I was unbearable. He had mental health issues as a result of being in the service. He went in for about 8 years, and we just kind of drifted apart. And then unfortunately he passed away. And a little while after he passed away, I discovered Pathfinder and fourth edition at the same time. And kind of dabbled with that a little bit. And then it was about 5 or 6 years ago, I remember going into my local game store, seeing the DCC rulebook there and fifth edition, picked up DCC. And I was just like, oh yeah, this is where it's at.
Harkens back, don't it?
Yeah. And I'm like, and like all those images from Kovacs, Pogue, and Bradley, and everybody in there. And I was just like, oh my God, this looks like the books my brother and I used to play in, compared to like the super nice art. And I don't want to say the art wasn't nice back in the 80s by any means, but the fancier art, I guess you would say, fully colorized. And
every page has a
digitally drawn or whatnot. Yeah. And it was just like getting sucked through a time portal back to 1981, 82, opening that DCC rulebook. Pardon me, I just need to take a drink there. And let's see. After I discovered those, I got back into playing, started going to the game store. There was a West Marches style campaign going on there, so I got into that. And then COVID hit. And I was like, I got to do something. Like, I'm old, so I hadn't discovered Discord or anything at that point. And they ended up eventually shifting the West Marches campaign to Discord. But prior to that, I'm like, I've got to find something to do. I can't leave my house. I can't go and hang out with my friends. I can't do anything, really. So I had a little bit of money sitting around, and I'm like, I've got my PlayStation. There's a stream and stuff going on. And I had always wanted to be like a broadcast personality, for lack of a better term, at the moment. And when I was a little kid, after my brother had left for the Marines and I was the only kid in the neighborhood, I got this little handheld Panasonic tape recorder. Excuse me. And I had a 45 record player. And for you, those folks out there that don't know, 45 records, the records would play at 45 revolutions per minute. And then you had 33 RPM and 72. So you had the three speeds of records. Anyway, I would record the 45s onto the tape, but I would speak over like I was, Wolfman Jack or something. And I used to love to do that voice and be like, "This is Wolfman Jack." And yeah, he was so big back then, and all of a sudden, fast forward back to 2019, 2020, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's actually technology to fulfill my dream from when I was 7 years old. And I'm like, oh man, and I was terrified to do it. But I finally bit the bullet and did it. And here we are. I've only done, I think, 53, 54 episodes over 3 years.
That's phenomenal. I mean, I think if you don't include the like special episodes, I think we're just now hitting like 51, and that's about
Thanks.
3.5 years. So, kudos to you. I mean, it's a lot harder when you're, the only person in charge. You don't have the co-host to lean on for stuff. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
well, I don't shut up, as folks can probably tell that are listening now. So it comes pretty easy for me to talk. And the other reason I started the channel is I have major, major social anxiety. I should say had, because I was super shy, super quiet, and very, very reserved. Which no one can believe, but it was more around other people and people I didn't know. So I really wanted to force myself out of my comfort zone. I'm like, dude, when COVID's over, this sucks being completely alone. Like I'd always said, man, I'd love to live on a farm 10,000 miles away from people and all that. I never want to do that. So it's amazing how much you need human interaction. And I didn't realize it until COVID hit. And gaming delivers just that, especially when it's like with people you don't know. And I would have such a hard time going to the game store and playing with people I didn't know. So I'm like, we're just gonna throw myself, I'm gonna throw myself to the wolves. So it was like I picked myself up by the metaphorical collar and threw myself out there, and I'm like, go do it. And now I don't have any problem talking to anybody. And like you and I had never met before our last interview. We had chatted
Yeah,
through Facebook and
that's
whatnot.
about it.
But like when we got together, I felt like it was just like, boom, I'm like, this is my buddy Lou.
Yeah, fast friends. I mean, you realize just how much you have in common, and just gaming brings people together. I don't know any other hobby, any other pastime that you spend some time talking with someone, rolling some dice with someone, and you realize, regardless of any differences you might have, that this is someone that it's just like you. We're all that same guy or gal,
Yeah. And had I not really pushed myself into the center of the fire, so to speak, I don't think, I don't know. I don't know what I think. I would be a compl I would probably just be a hermit. And that's how my brother was, It's like after he got out of the Marines, he lived in a little trailer out in the middle of nowhere and just isolated. And I'm like, nah, because I was at the same age as him and everything. And I'm like, nope, So, yeah, I love gaming. So, and now I've got this other crazy thing I'm trying to do. And
before you go into that, because I do want to get to that territory. But so as far as your episodes go, I know that I normally catch them on YouTube. Is that primarily where they're housed, or?
It is. Okay. That is the only place other than my computer that they're housed at the moment. I have been thinking of going back through all the episodes, extracting the audio and do it, and posting on like Spotify, Apple Podcasts and whatnot, just to get my brand out there more, I guess you would say, and get known a little bit more. And as funny as it sounds, there are still game creators that I'm scared to approach. Or I wouldn't say scared to approach, but intimidated by. And I've got to get over it, because Janelle Jacques was someone I really wanted to interview. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we lost her.
Yeah, the clock's always ticking, isn't
it? Yeah, and it's like, I'm like, dude, you gotta stop being nervous about it. So you can see I'm still working on it. It's a work in progress.
What makes me laugh is when my buddies and I first started this podcast, it was about a year, I think, before we had our first guest host on. And even then, I mean, it was someone that I kind of knew and had played games with. And so wasn't, you know, the biggest jump in the world, but I was still nervous about asking him to be on. But you, I mean, even in your early episodes, like you got some really heavy hitters, people that, you know, are just known, especially in the indie scene, to be cranking out some of the top level stuff. So it always amuses me your perspective of yourself in some of these instances, because I was when I first was kind of watching your stuff, I was like, damn, man, who is this guy? How did he get them on? I haven't even had that person on, you know? But
it is funny because, like, you know, I mean, Diogo Nogueira's a perfect example. You know, I mean, one, I'm going to screw the name of the award up to Eni or Eni. I always mess it up, but he won a gold for Hall of the Blood King for OSE when it first came out. And I was just like, why not ask him? But I've still got people that for whatever reason, I'm like hesitant to approach. And it's not anything because of them. It's just my own insecurities.
The other thing I think is cool about your show. I like how it kind of has, it goes in different directions with different guests. Like for instance, I was just listening to the John Hambone McGuire episode.
Yep.
And there was gaming stuff on there, which thrills me because, of course, that's, you know, one of my main hobbies. But you guys also talk about movies and got, you know, into the weeds in that. And reminded me of a bunch of movies. It's like, oh, yeah, I used to love that movie. I haven't seen that forever. I've had that feeling several times watching your shows where you guys start to talk about something that's tangential to gaming. But it's like, oh, yeah, you know, and I feel like it's not, because, you know, I've got a lot of podcasts I listen to that are strictly just gaming. And after a while, it's like, OK, I got to take a break from these because I'm a little oversaturated with that. But your show, I feel like, has this real happy medium of talking about a variety of things, but then also having the gaming portion in there.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And you actually have, that is a fabulous compliment for one, but you also, I feel like, paid me probably one of the highest compliments that someone that interviews people could be given. When you said to me prior to our interview, you felt like you were sitting down to have a beer with a friend. And that is the highest praise, I think, that anyone doing what we do can receive, because that's what you want. You don't want someone feeling tense or reserved, apprehensive, whatever. You want them to just chill out and have fun. And I think that's why my conversations do branch off into other, like you said, tangential things. But it's just because I just like to shoot the crap with people, you know.
It's natural, man. It's not these stiff interviews that you hear people do sometimes. You're right. It's people talking.
Now, my first couple were like that, though, of like, because you could tell I was like reading questions. If you go back, I interviewed Tylo Graf and Steven Yeardley for my first interview. And I was so nervous going into it. I think I'm sweating through the whole interview, like visibly. And I'm like, so how did you work on this book? And it's probably not that, I'm probably grossly over exaggerating, but that's how it felt to me while I was doing it. And I got off the interview after, and I'm just like, oh my God. One of my friends watching, he was like, dude, that was great. Nice job. And I was like, you actually liked it? So yeah, and now I've just kind of been, I haven't been putting that much out lately. I've just been working on trying to actually write something, and then also the other stuff.
Yeah. So tell us about the other stuff.
The other stuff is I am attempting to open an online store with a very short-term 6-month goal of trying to get to a physical store. Primarily because I, much like most people out there, am tired of working for someone. And I'm just tired of being, yeah, go do this, go do that, go do this, go do that. And I have worked in e-commerce for the last 10 years, or actually longer than that. It's been about 14 years now. And, you know, I've made all kinds of money for people, not me. I have tried to start a few smaller businesses. I tried starting a 3D print business at one point, and I went out and I bought like 6 printers. I'm like, we're going to go ahead and do this. And I got bored with it. And then I realized that 3D printers were a lot more maintenance than, like, they make them look like they're plug and play.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not. And I learned, it's funny because now I could take them apart and put them back together like it's nothing from having to teach myself how to do it. But it just got to be too much. So I cast that away, went back to working, I guess you'd say, in the mainstream. I don't know what to call it. And then
job grandma would understand, that kind
yeah,
of thing.
You know, a job that grandma would be like, I'm proud of you, Sonny. And, you know, I'm doing that now, but I'm still e-commerce. And I have a relatively cool boss. The first meeting that we had together, he goes, I want to tell you something. If in 3 years of you being here, if you're still here, I'm going to be disappointed if you haven't started something of your own and started your way out of here.
Nice.
So I'm coming up on my 3rd year with him in July. And I don't like to disappoint people. So my hope is by the end of the summer to tender my resignation, shake hands with him, and open doors to the future. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Now, when I was on your show and we were talking, you'd just gotten some kind of bad news. I think it was from Alliance, or maybe you don't even want to mention who it was from, but from a distributor that said, well, you know, we don't want to open new accounts for online stores or whatever.
Yeah, it really bugs me. I do understand it, though. And I'm not going to say it doesn't ruffle my feathers that I haven't been able to find a single, well, that's not true. I do have a couple of distributors that have worked with me, some individuals that have worked with me to get me their material, and some more I'm going to be working with in the future. Mm-hmm. I'm launching the store next Tuesday, April 1st.
Oh, wow.
It happens to be coincidence that it's April Fool's Day. I don't have the largest amount of inventory to open with, but I've been sitting on so much stuff for so long. Like, you can see the shelf over my shoulder here. It's got about, there's about 60 books sitting back there and about 40,000 various magic singles that I'm still working on plugging in. And yeah, you can only sit on inventory for so long before it starts to eat away at your soul watching it just sit there,
Soul
you
living
know. And it's
space.
like, so I don't have like the world's largest inventory that I'm opening with because of not being able to find someone that would really work with me. Like, I had one, and then they ended up changing their policy to working with brick and mortar stores only. And I was like, ugh. So that kind of fizzled out. And then I really focused more on the card end of things for now. And I've got this weird little plan in my head of how I'm going to make everything work. I'm working on procuring a laser engraver to do a bunch of different things. I figure if I could run six 3D printers, I can certainly handle one laser. So, and then, yeah, that's about it with the store. I hope it works, you know. And yeah, do you mind if I pitch
No,
the
please
domain?
do. Yeah,
Yeah,
tell them.
if folks do want to check it out and sign up to find out when I open up next Tuesday, it's just gameswithdave.com. Very easy to remember. And yeah, if you'd like to check it out and sign up, that would be awesome. Yeah, it may be, I may trip up a couple times going through the beginning phases, but there's growing pains in everything that you do.
I'll
So.
definitely make sure that the link is there in the show notes and on our Facebook page for this old dungeon.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
But yeah, and if you're out there also and you are either a distributor or you know of a distributor that'll work with an online store, send that information my way and I'll get it to him because it's really crummy when someone won't let you have the ball for a moment,
It's more like playing dodgeball and being the only kid getting hit.
too, yeah. So, but it's interesting. I've never thought about, well, that's a lie. I've always dreamt of having my own game store. I think every gamer has, but I've always known that I'm not the kind of guy that could make that work out well. But I've never thought about the actual steps in making that happen, and the whole idea of, well, you've got to have inventory, which means you have to have someone selling you stuff at wholesale to be able to make that work out. And
Yeah.
wow.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. I talked to a few local game store owners about things before I even thought of taking a baby step forward, and talked with my fiance. I'm like, what do you think of us taking everything that we've got saved up and putting it into this? So we talked about it, sat on it, talked about it, and then we're like, hey, let's do it. You only live once. And I haven't had the easiest life, so failing at this would not be the worst thing in the world. Like, it would be disappointing, and I'm going to be bummed out, but I don't think it's going to.
It's not gonna keep you down or anything, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, for one, my biggest focus is going to be on indie RPGs because I really think that's where the sauce of the industry is at. Or, like, and it's like, it's so vibrant right now, too, that it's just the indie scene is just going boom. Like, this amazing, amazing project that I had backed called Unnatural Selections. And that took me back to being back in high school with how that is set up and it being in a three ring binder.
Yeah.
Well, monsters and the black and white art and the layout of it. And oh my God, Lou, it's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. No, I agree with you. I think, you know, it's been a long while since I've bought anything from a major production company that I've been anywhere near as delighted with as with a lot of my friends that make indie stuff and some folks I don't even know that I've gotten indie products from. There's just something about them. There's some spirit in them that's so much more vibrant and captivating than what I'm seeing from Wizards and Pinnacle and other companies. Not that anything's wrong with those companies, just that there's something different.
Yeah, well, they're like, for me, like when I open up Unnatural Selections, Ninja City, Neon Lords of the Toxic Wasteland and stuff like that, it's, you feel the passion behind them. Whereas like Wizards, I mean, I've played my fair share of 5e, you know, and I don't have any gripes. My gripe is what they did. But they're like it's the difference between the corner store where you know the owner and going to Best Buy.
Yeah.
Or going to Applebee's to get the same thing that you could get at the corner store. You know, and it's that corner store, you're supporting someone that needs it. You can see their passion in their business, feel the passion in their business, and it just comes through, you know? I love it, like, so much. And, like, I don't think I've interviewed anybody that's not an indie publisher. I haven't actually thought about it until just this second. Like, I can't think of anyone that's, like, I don't know, big box writer.
Yeah. Huh.
It's interesting. I haven't thought of that. So yeah, I definitely love the indie
when
scene.
I think about like who I'd like to get on the interview. And I'm probably wrong. There probably are some folks out there that I would like to interview that are currently writing for the major companies. But the ones that I can think of that are big names are all people that used to be in the industry that now have moved on to other things, you know, like Zeb Cook and some of those fellows and gals.
The one person I would love to talk to that works for Wizards is Jason Tondreau. He was one, he worked for Paizo for a while, left Paizo and went to Wizards, but he is responsible for the Deck of Many Worlds for Starfinder.
Oh, okay.
Or he's one of the people, I should say, responsible for it. And I thought that was an amazing product. I don't know if you ever played Starfinder.
I did not get into Starfinder, so I don't really have much knowledge on it. But
well, you would lay the cards out, and they were based off numbers and die rolls, if I recall. And you would arrange the cards, and it would decide what kind of atmosphere the planet had. What the denizens of the planet were and what kind of topography the planet had and stuff like that. And it was so cool.
A little generator. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really fun the way you laid the cards out. And after he left Paizo, they obviously kept making it, but they transitioned the cards into one of the books. I can't remember which one now, but now you can roll with like a D10, D20, whatever, and do the same thing. But I thought the cards were a lot more fun, and I think Jason would be a lot of fun to talk to. There's a lot of people I want to get on, like Ed Greenwood being one of them. He is one of the people that I honestly have been terrified to approach. And it's funny because he seems like the nicest man in the world. But for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's because I've looked up to him since I was a kid, and maybe I'm starstruck, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things I can't explain, but I've pulled him up on Facebook 1,000 times, and I can't manage to type the message. That's the weirdest thing.
You know, Like I say, I listen to a lot of gaming podcasts, always have. I mean, I can think of three or four that he's been on that aren't like, or at least at the time that he was on them, weren't like, 10,000 subscriber podcasts. So you should give it a try. I mean, I've talked to, with him a little bit. I got people that talk with him quite a bit that are friends of mine that are in the con circuit, and everybody has the same opinion that he's just a total teddy bear, will talk your ear off, no matter who you are, and is delighted to do it. So
Yeah,
that.
I've got to because, Janelle is my example of don't hesitate, because I think he and I would have so much fun talking just with the way from what I've seen of his interviews and other videos of him and my personality. I'm just like, oh man, we would have so much fun.
Yeah.
So I gotta, yeah, you're right. So I'll do it.
Yeah, we th about the only person that was in the mainstream game design that we had on our podcast so far, we had Bill Slavasek on, who
Oh, nice.
yeah, so but the funny thing is, getting him on, we were actually trying to reach a friend of his that had written this Ghostbusters adventure that we were going to be covering. And it was a guy who'd done some work in the industry but wasn't like a household name. But I couldn't find him anywhere. But I always kept running across Bill Slavasek's Facebook page. So finally I instant messaged him and said, "Hey, can you help me find so and so? I see that you had edited a book that he had written for the Ghostbusters game, and we'd love to talk to him about this game, but I can't find a contact for him." And well, it turns out the guy had passed away, but Bill's like, "I'll come on and talk about it. I helped edit that book. We helped, do this other part of the system." And so like it was one of those things where I would have never in a million years reached out and asked him to be part of our podcast, because I would thought, this guy's got way too much on his plate to want to, come, do something with us, especially back then. I mean, I think we had 100 listeners an episode back then. But he did, no drop of the hat, no big deal. And it was really pretty cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, I don't know why where my shyness in that matter comes, but yeah, I gotta get over it. So what's up next for you? This is weird for me being on the other side of the microphone,
So
it's
I normally don't talk much about my own publication stuff on the podcast, just because I don't want it to be one of those like what do you call those vanity press kind of things. So I've got some things. I got a Dare Luck Club thing I'm working on right now to get out that was kickstarted last month. Or well, now it's getting on 2 months ago. And then I've got some another round of Unnatural Selections that's in the
nice.
design phase, I guess you could call it, where it's kind of listing out what I've got ideas for and then trying to put together the best combination for the next pack. But just busy as heck. I've decided to place a whole bunch of new adventures in some upcoming cons to play test them. But this was back when I figured I'd be further along with them than what I am. So now
Oh,
it's like I've
no.
got five adventures I've got to get done really quickly, or at least, to a playable state. I'll get through it.
Now, see, that sounds daunting as all get out to me. To have like that sitting in front of me sounds more terrifying than trying to open the store. Like with the store, I'm just like, yeah, but if you're like, Dave, I need these five things finished in a month, I'm gonna be like,
Well, the counterpoint though is that, if these don't get done, the worst thing that happens is I embarrass myself at a convention and run a half-assed game that nobody enjoys, which it will be terrifying to me in the moment, but it's not like you and your fiance have invested your lives in this. And so, like you said, there's worse things that could happen. You'll bounce back, no big deal if it doesn't work out. But the tension of that for me would be it'd be too many chips on the table. I just couldn't do it.
it's funny that you say chips, because when I decided I was going to do the store, I had been talking with pretty much one of my best friends. I'd say he probably is my best friend. And I ended up sending him a GIF of this guy pushing all the poker chips in. And he's like, you're going for it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going for it.
Nice.
And I've spent the last 2 months trying to build everything, ran into some problems with a third party company that was supposed to do some inventory management that set me back. But I think I've got that mostly straightened out. So I didn't end up utilizing them. I won't throw them under the bus so that they're but yeah, I'm excited, man. Like, I won't lie, I'm terrified, even though I probably don't look or sound it. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
I don't know about you, but I've got to have just a little bit of that, right? I've got to have a little bit of fear in me to produce at my like top level.
Yeah, well, it's like the fuel for the fire, you know. It's like throwing that extra log into the train engine, you know, and just getting that little extra boost. I think, at least.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Oh, so yeah.
So we had talked about, you know, being this old dungeon, we've got to do some sort of reminiscing on old games, you know, bring up something from the past, from the gaming world. And you'd run across a character sheet that your brother had that was kind of locked in your memory. And we decided we'd talk a little bit about that. So you want to kind of tell us about the sheet?
Yeah. I had found what I thought was a character sheet for a whole different game system that it seems like through both of our research today found out that it was actually a third party first edition Advanced Dungeons and Dragons character sheet creator. But it was for the Earth Gaming Systems, and it was ERTHE. And it is the coolest character sheet. And the reason that I thought that it was for a game system of its own, and someone out there listening might be able to fill us in the future, that I thought it was its own system due to my brother having played a badger. And I don't know, like you had mentioned, we were talking before we started recording, that maybe it was like something along the lines from Metamorphosis Alpha or Gamma World.
Like, I remember in the day people crossing over Gamma World and AD&D quite a bit because the systems were pretty innocuous to each other. Where it was, you know, there was just a hair's difference between the two. So I wondered if maybe that was the case, that was the point of the character sheet they had. And maybe that's, but I don't really know.
Yeah, we couldn't find, neither of us really could find that much information on this company. It was from Earth Gaming Systems from 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I could really find in researching it was the character sheet. And I found this other thing. Let me pull it back up here. It was like the business information or something like that.
Yeah, from Oregon is the
yes.
One that, yeah.
Yep.
I ran across that too, where it was talking, it said that they were, I want to say it was listed as a 1983 license to start a company or to have a company in Oregon.
Yeah.
But and I ran across, and I'm trying to find it now. That's why, you know, for you listening, you can't see this, but unfortunately, Dave's seen me look sideways because I'm looking up at a different computer screen.
I'm doing the same thing because I'm trying to see if maybe there's something we missed.
A site that I found where a guy was so in love with that point sheet that he reconstructed it and then, you know, kind of put it out there for the world to enjoy. And he had a lot of facts that he had researched about them as a company, but he too, he had said that he couldn't really find anything else that they had done or why they went away, you know, what happened to them. I do know that, you know, you look at 81 to 83 and that starts to get into the time period where TSR went from being like, oh, everybody can play in our sandbox to, you know, turning into like Sue Happy T dollar sign R, you know, And so I do wonder, you know, did they crack down on them like they did on the whole like Roll Aids and the other companies that were doing stuff for AD&D? I don't know.
It's too bad because it really is a cool character sheet.
Yeah, and I tell you, it reminds me, the character sheet I kind of ended up using the most was the second edition character sheet because I got them for Christmas once. And before then, I just used, you know, Spiral Notebook, that kind of thing. But they were really, really well laid out and very well organized. And it really reminded me of this sheet, which came much, much earlier. You know, the early point, or I keep saying point sheets, early character sheets, a lot of them were just lines, you know, just like,
yeah,
have like a little abbreviation and a line for you to put your information. And then it really just horrible looking, like hard on the eyes. And then in the late 80s to 90s, there's this transformation where you start to get like boxes and boxes where it's a little better organized. But this sheet looks like those, but 10 years earlier.
Right, right. Yeah, I love this sheet because I found a form fillable version of it here. And I think you said you have the same one.
Yeah.
It sounds like.
Desperately trying to get back to it, but I can't find it again. I'll have to, before this episode I'll shoot you the posts, link. I'll definitely get a link in there.
I will send you the
just
link
so they can
right
see
now.
Because it is, you know, you look at it with modern eyes, you might be like, eh. But for its time, I mean, it was just so far ahead of the curve.
Yeah, like they were way ahead of their time with this sheet.
What I did find interesting is, because this kind of got me on the tick of like, well, what's the evolution of character sheets and you know, what did they look like for different games that I play now but didn't play back then? And what I found is like, if you want to find your next game that you want to play, go look at character sheets. Just do a search for character sheets. And the sheets have such like a personality to them nowadays, especially that you'll be thumbing through them and be like, oh wow, that looks cool. I want to play that, you know. And you kind of look at little pieces of the mechanic on the sheet, you know, by the different attributes it lists and the different kind of boxes and utilization of space for how you track damage or whatever. It's a whole nother way to shop for a game, folks.
It's really funny that you say that because I think I've done that subconsciously, because I'll look at character sheets and be like, oh man, that one's a little overwhelming.
Yeah,
we're gonna back off from that one. And then I'll open up a different book and I'll be like, oh, I could play this easy. And yeah, a character sheet that's really easy to learn. Have you heard of or played Spire?
Spire, I've heard of it, I've not played it.
I'm supposed to run it for my regular Friday group sometime soon here, but you play Dark Elves. You're basically drow, and they are enslaved by the High Elves. It's a very touchy subject, but you play basically, it's like the Rebels versus the Empire of what you're trying to do. Like the tagline of the game, it's like Spire, the city must fall. So nice. Like your whole objective is like, there's a shadow conclave of drow that support the rebellion and feed them thing, like not literally feed them things, but we'll feed them like information like where they can get weapons and stuff like that. So it's a very interesting game. It's a D10 pool, if I recall. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun one. And
you have to post on Facebook how that goes. It does sound interesting.
Yeah, and then I'm trying to remember the designer's name. Grant Howlett, I think, is the name. Okay. And he did another game, Heart, where Heart is set under Spire. And it's this thing, I don't want to give away too much, but it's you go underground to find cool stuff, and it's very dangerous, I guess, is a good synopsis of it. Because I think it Heart, the name Heart plays into the game. It is like the heart of the world, basically, or something along those lines. I'm trying not to spoil it.
So. Do you know, does it continue with the elf theme, or does it go into like dwarves or something? Or
it does play on the dwarves a little bit, but it's more like I'm trying to remember, because I really don't, and I don't want to misspeak on it. So I'm actually gonna pull it up here and see. So it says, Heart, the City Beneath is an award-winning complete tabletop role-playing game about delving into a nightmare undercity that will give you everything you've ever dreamed of or kill you in the process. But it doesn't... It says it shares the setting with Spire, but it expands the unreal world beneath it. Interesting. Yeah, but they make some really cool stuff. It's why can't I Rowan Rook and Descard are the pub is the publisher. But it looks like fun.
It's got like a almost like a Yakuza Japan mixed with, you know, medieval fantasy elements kind of look to the art.
Yeah. Yep. Oh man, that special edition cover. Ooh, are you looking at it now? The website?
I don't know if I'm on the same one as you are, but the is this, let's see. I don't know if that's the special edition, but it's got like a diagonally framed group of activists. I don't know. What would you call these?
But another thing I want to get into, which you will definitely get an invite to if you're interested, is I want to get into regularly streaming games on Games with Dave. So like, I don't think I'll settle in with any one system just because I have like 400 or 500 different games at my house that we could play. So I think I'll kind of do like a game of the week thing, try to get different folks to come on, maybe get the creator of the game to come on and run. Which, speaking of, if you're not busy Saturday night, Martin Ouellet and a group of us are playing a game of crime-fighting luchadors.
Yes, yes. No, so. I would love to this Saturday. I'm out just because I've got family stuff going on. But any other time, man, that would be fun. I was just talking with some of my buddies about something I'll probably never do. But so Goodman Games has their own Twitch channel, and they kind of look for some programming on it. And one of the things I thought would be cool is to do a program on there. You know, I was pitching the idea of doing it Saturday mornings just because that's about the only time I'm regularly available for something. But doing like a, we call it like the test pilots or something, where you would basically just test the game out, run games that, you know, somebody, you know, like small publishers are about to, you know, take to crowdfunding or whatever, and they need a test play of it. Give them a chance to get a test play in and give them a little bit of advertising because it's being played and people can watch it be played. But I thought that'd be fun. So it's like always rotating what you're running through on it.
Yeah, that's an awesome idea, man. You should do it. Pitch them.
Yeah, it's one of those, I'm going to talk about it, but probably not ever do it just because it's such a big commitment. And it's one of those things where it's, you know, if I had more time, it's definitely something I'd want to do, but it's, out of the hundreds of things I want to do, it's priority levels just below the surface of the stuff I can actually handle. But
well, that's why I've held off from actually streaming games, because I'm kind of inconsistent with my interviews, that I don't want to do a game 1 month, go be like, sugar, I'm too busy this month to run a game, I can't do it, and then go 2 months and then run another game. So I definitely need to make sure I've got the time freed up to do it. Because I don't want this young lady back here killing me. So.
Kind of getting back, maybe even closing out with the character sheet thing. One of the things I've found that I'm starting to like orient towards are like really visual character sheets with like the doodles and things that help make up the form.
Like kind of the hand-drawn ones that people have. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy, James V. West, that does a ton of them, and a lot of them are free on drive-through RPG. But like that, for whatever reason, that just jives with me right now. It makes it really easy to use the sheet and fun and
Well,
get you in the
that, and I
mood for
think it's
games.
that indie thing again.
Now,
You know, it's that like kind of almost punk rock
yeah.
kind of vibe to it. It has really, especially after Wizards with the OGL fiasco, like indie RPGs are like the finger to the system in a way, which I
Yeah.
love. It's like, yeah, we're not going to conform. We're going to do our own thing and we're cool doing it.
Yeah.
You know? So, James V.
Yeah,
I got to
James
write that.
V. West. And he's done a lot of art for a lot of stuff. Does a lot of indie things, as well as some pretty high profile stuff. But you're talking about Martin. Martin, his book, the character sheet for it's also kind of that way, where it's,
Yeah, it's so cool.
yeah.
Yep. Yeah, with the luchador in the corner and then the boxes and the stars and stuff on it. Yeah, I love it. Like, you know, and to go back to that, it's just that indie vibe, man. You know, it's like, it's so raw.
Well, it's what you mentioned. It's like this. In that scene, people are capturing what it is they're creating, the vibe, the feel, the theme, and they're just turning that spigot on 100% and being like, this is what it is. You're either going to get it and dig it, or you're not interested, and that's cool either way. They're not, it just doesn't feel as like sanded down and test marketed as what a lot of the major games are getting to feel like.
Yeah. You know, and it's like it's almost like a fringe thing, you know, and that's what I love about it. Like I worked in the disc golf industry for 10 years, and it was more that when it was a fringe sport, it really appealed to me. And then it started to get really popular and like everyone and their mother was coming out to play, and it was like, well, this is lame. And I'm just like all the this is what I was trying to get away from, and it wasn't as fringe anymore for me, so I get out of it, and now like professionally I sell urns, and then I come home and I play with Magic cards at night. You know, it's like you and I'm like now I'm happy again because I'm back on the outskirts of town. So, oh, shucks. Well, we definitely made it an hour.
Yeah,
I wanted to let it pause for a few seconds there so you would have that cue of, oh man, I can't believe it's almost 10 o'clock.
It passed fast, and it's when you're having fun, right? Time flies, and
Yeah.
once
Dude, I always have
again,
so much fun talking to
you
you. Like, it was really funny. The first place I was ever, or how I was introduced to you, I guess you would say, was through the pizza party. After seeing you on that. And I'm like, I want to talk to that guy. He seems like a really fun dude, and you are. So.
Pizza party. I always enjoy getting on there and trying to wear something crazy, trying to just like almost get to Joey's level. I don't. There's no way I'm ever going to get to his level, but every time he invites me on, I'm always like, oh man, I got to dig something weird out of the closet to wear to.
I was so nervous when he had me on because he had me stat out the Ultimate Warrior.
Oh man.
And I made up a ton. Just like I was like, we're gonna make up every wrestling move. I did like a D7, a D5, and a D3 table and all this stuff to it. I gotta pull it up, see exactly what I did. I can find it here. But it was nuts. I can't find it. I don't know where I put it. I did have it on my desktop for the longest time. But yeah, I was so nervous going on there because, Joey, again, is one of those people that's like a huge inspiration to me. And I'm just like almost starstruck at times with him, like, wow, it's Joey. But he's such a laid back and chill guy.
Well, he's one of those guys, and I knew a few people like this growing up. There's a dude on the football team in high school that was like this, where they're the coolest person in the world, but when you're around them, they make you feel like you're the coolest person in the
world. Yes. Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, because I got to meet Joey in person for the first time at TotalCon, which
because that happened after we last talked.
Yeah, I had a blast. I wasn't able to go down for the whole week due to just life circumstances. I went down Thursday night and spent the night, went for the first day Friday and then Saturday and had to leave Sunday to go to a funeral and spent the night back down there and came home the next day. But I had so much fun. Like, it was just a weird weekend because of the funeral being thrown into the mix with a gaming convention. Was kind of weird, but I had so much fun. Like, and I spent way too much money.
I got a convention tomorrow. I'm going to Hoosier Con, which is in Indianapolis. Just going for a day of it, but that I'm worried about that same thing. I'm like, man, I need to just take cash with me, only take a certain amount, you know.
Yeah, leave the credit cards home, man, because they will get you in trouble.
Yep.
What I didn't realize, if you're good to keep going for a little while. Yeah. All right. I thought of our pre-90s game that has made a comeback, Top Secret.
Mm-hmm.
Because Merle put out with, it was Merle Rasmussen, Jason Elliott, and someone else that put this version out.
Got it up there. But...
New World Order?
Yeah, New World Order.
Yeah. So when I'm going to be getting a stream of that going. So I'd love to have you if you'd like to play.
Yeah, I'd love to play it. I've played all the versions of Top Secret. I take that back. I've played all the versions but that. I've read that. I've got all the everything you can have for it. I've got as far as I know. Because they haven't printed a whole bunch. There's only like, I think, five adventures out there for it, and then the base box set.
Yep. And then have you seen the little zine that was done? It was a third party product.
Perhaps not.
Hold on, and I will grab it. It's right up
here. Sam, one of the adventures I've got is a small, like, digest size book, but I think it's just an adventure. I haven't actually read it yet.
Let me see if I can find it here. I hope nothing comes crashing down off that shelf now that I've taken this down, because it will scare the bejumpus out of me. I think I've got it in the box here. At least I hope.
Man, I really love the way they redid that game.
Oh, yeah.
The first version of it, it's got some things about it I really like and find interesting as far as game design, but it does not play like a spy movie, which is what I was wanting out of it. When I say spy movie, I mean like, you know, James Bond, like an action spy movie. Second version of it was better, but it's still just, there are parts that it just, you would take an hour to get through a scene that should have been, you know, 10 minutes of the
right.
movie.
Yeah, I think that this version feels like it's going to lend to that 007 feel.
Yeah, when I was playing around just with the mechanics, it definitely felt like it had that super quick, high action, high risk, high reward kind of beat to it.
I don't know what I did with the zine. I can't find it. Now I feel bad. Oh, yeah. I've got to find this. Right
trying
here.
To remember where, I think. If mine wasn't like buried in the heart of all those board games off to my side here, I would grab it, because the one thing I've got, and I haven't read it yet, I think it's an adventure, but it's a little digest. Yes, that.
Yeah. Okay. So you do have this, the drop. Yes. Okay. Yep. They had that. They had all their stuff out at TotalCon. And at first I went up and they told me the box set price. And I was like, okay, how much is the hardcover? And they told me that price, and I'm doing the math, and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to take it all. And the girl the girl that was behind the table, she's like, really? And I'm like, yeah. I go, I want one of everything. And she's like, all right, thanks. So yeah, as soon as we got back, we got an Airbnb that we stayed in down there. And as soon as we got back to the house and I pulled that out, like, there was just this resounding, like, oh, we got to play that. So I'm like, well, I'll stream it and we can all play it and it'll be fun. Yeah, so
kick me an invitation. I'll be all in on that.
Hell yeah. Absolutely. So, and hopefully my friends aren't too rambunctious for you. So
gamers are gamers.
Yep. So yeah, when we were down there, we sat up until like 2 or 3 in the morning playing Shadow Dark one of the nights. And then we were back up at 8 to go back to the con. And I was like, oh, I miss these days of my younger years, staying up until the wee hours of the morning, or staying up and keeping on playing past sunrise. Done that a few times.
Yep. You'd like go to bed 2 o'clock in the morning after pausing the session and wake up the next morning and pick it back up after breakfast.
Yep. So, yeah. And we did that with some Risk games too. We had some very long Risk games, my brother and I.
Had some cousins that would play Axis and Allies out at this little cottage that my family would go to, and it would last like the whole week. Like, they'd set it up on one back table and they'd play it a little bit and then come back to it the next day. And
the memories.
GamesWithDave.com, right?
GamesWithDave.com, yes.
Okay. And it's July, what am I saying? April 2nd, debut day. So I'll get that in the show notes. I'll get a link to the character sheet we were talking about from Earthy Games.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to say it. I call it Earth, and I don't know what to call it because of the way they spelled it. It's like, you know, it's like Eartha, but with an E, and it's like,
no
way. Yeah.
So, but yeah, we'll put a link to that also, because it is. I mean, if someone would say, hey, let's play first edition AD&D, I think I'd whip that sheet out, because it is pretty sweet how they got all laid out.
It is.
But and then do you have any idea when your next interview will be?
Well, we've got the game this Saturday, and then I don't know. Maybe it'll be Ed if I decide to pony up and reach out to him. So we'll see. I haven't, I've reached out to a few people that aren't hyperactive on like social media. So we'll see if they get back to me anytime soon. I don't know, to be honest.
Huh?
It's really weird where I feel like we're on air. Like, visually. And I'm like overly conscious of how I'm talking and moving and stuff, because I'm so used to
all this. There's been so many times that I don't know what it is, but it's kind of like I think they call it anomia, where like there's a word that you know, but you can't get it out.
Yeah.
And I get like that sometimes with people's names, where it's like somebody I've known for a long time and I go to say their name, I'm like, and there's so many episodes where I've had to edit that part out of it just because, I mean, it's like, man, I feel like such a chump. But
dude, trust me, I am notorious for doing that. Like, but it's why I do everything live, is because I don't like editing and I'm bad at it, and I've got to get better at it so I don't have to do everything live. But
yeah. That's the glory of this episode, is I don't think there's going to be much editing on it. So it'll be pretty raw and right to the folks. I'm hoping it'll be up Saturday afternoon. I figure tomorrow I won't get to it because of the con, and then Saturday morning I'll do it and post it. So
nice.
Yeah, you helped me get one in. I have yet to miss a month with this podcast.
I don't think I've missed a month. I think I've had like at least one a month, but
nice.
March is... Did I have one this month?
Yeah.
Well, I've got the game, which technically counts.
Well, no, but you also have Maguire was this month.
Oh, that's right. That was because that got moved. That was supposed to have been the end, very end of February. But he wasn't feeling well, so we pushed it to the 16th. That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. I had actually thought that was in the end of February, so that worked.
Yeah, no, I got a lot, he was such a fun interview. While listening to that one. That was cool. I enjoyed that one a lot.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun to talk to, and I felt really bad having to jump off at the end to go pick up my son, and I'm like, and he's getting his own car tomorrow, so I can't wait, and it's going to be really weird not being a taxi, but I'm super excited to have him having his own conveyance.
As our kids have grown up, that's been one of the interesting things. You know, you get you bite your nails when they get their license and get their cars, but then you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have to run anyone anywhere. They can run.
I'm free.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you so much for stepping up the plate here and helping me out with getting this episode out.
Oh, my pleasure, man. Anytime. Anytime. And yeah, I had a blast. Thanks for, I'm glad you threw the bat signal out there and I was able to reply. So I had a blast. Awesome. Doesn't feel like an hour and a half went by.
No. Well, and you know, I always tell this to people that we do what I call these one-shot episodes, these shorter episodes. Got to get you on the regular program sometime to talk about like a full-length adventure or full-length rule set or something.
Oh,
something
I'm
we
definitely
can really
up for
get
it.
Our teeth into it more. And so the other co-hosts can kind of get to know you and banter with you, because it's just always a pleasure talking with you. And you know, I feel like there's so much more we could talk about
despite the pauses, there's always pauses in conversations. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that's still weird to me, though, is pauses in conversation where I do video live, because it feels real like I get that weird like, uh-oh, there's dead air. Yeah, I can't edit it out, and it's like, uh-oh. So yeah, I feel like I ramble incoherently at times, but I think that's just my imagination.
Yeah, I don't, like I think I've told you before, it's not anything I've noticed as a listener. So
yeah, I know I'm overly hard on myself. So
all right. Well, listeners, this has been another episode of This Old Dungeon. Hopefully you'll be able to catch us in another week with a full length episode covering the Dragonlance DL1 Dragons of Despair. So
nice.
Till next time, this has been Luau Lu here with Dave Townsend of Games with Dave. Roll them dice.
Have a good night, folks.
You have been listening to This Old Dungeon, copyright 2024. The opinions expressed by the hosts are simply that, opinions meant for entertainment value. If you have any questions, concerns, or would like to write into the program, please do so at thisolddungeon@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.